Hello, I'm Nicola, a reporter at New Model Advisor, and welcome back to The Advice Show, a podcast that gives you UK and global insights into the financial planning profession. Today, I'm joined by David Page, Head of Macroeconomic Research at AXA Investment Managers, to discuss bond markets, higher interest rates, and concerns around the US debt ceiling. So, hi, David, and thanks very much for joining us from Paris. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Nicola, and thanks for having me on the show.
Good, good. It's great to have you here. David, I want to get onto the US debt ceiling. It's something we've heard a lot about in recent months. But first of all, just on the kind of current market environment for bonds, something we've heard a lot is that markets aren't pricing in or may not be quite pricing in the longer term impact of the kind of substantial interest rate rises we've seen over the past year or so. Do you think that is the case? And if that is the case, you know, what could the impact on the bond market be moving forward as markets start to digest that?
Yeah, no, I think that they probably have factored in these big increases, so much so that in many ways markets are keen to look through into the next phase. And for quite some time, in fact, since the banking turmoils have emerged in March, US markets particularly have started pricing aggressively the fact that the Fed's going to have to start easing interest rates. So whereas, you know, the Fed itself is still having a conversation as to whether or not it's reached a peak, we think it probably has, but the Fed is cautious about announcing a pause at this stage. The markets not only assume that we have seen this peak, but that they're assuming several cuts before year end. Indeed, probably the first cut coming after the summer. So that's causing some problems for the Federal Reserve, that is still concerned that perhaps they haven't done enough in terms of tightening to quell inflation and to soften the economy sufficiently. So I think markets are going to go through a little bit of a period of turmoil in the second half of this year, because on the one hand, we think the policy rate is unlikely to fall by as much as markets have suggested, and that would suggest a repricing in bond markets, so yields, if anything, pushing a little bit higher. But at the same time, we're also expecting the economy to start finally showing some signs of rolling over, of entering what we think will only be a mild recession, but a recession that nevertheless will deliver the disinflation that the Federal Reserve ultimately wants and will ultimately leave the Federal Reserve in a position to cut rates, not this year, we don't think, but starting very early next year. So insofar as bond markets always try and anticipate that, they're going to have to price perhaps rates not moving quite as soon as they think, but still more evidence that ultimately we are going to see rates falling down. And I think that's going to leave markets sort of range trading. We've seen US 10-year yields around the 3.5% mark for some time. And we think sort of a level around that level is probably where we end the year as well.
Okay, thanks, David. That's really kind of comprehensive. Thank you. So, I mean, do you think, with that in mind, do you think that investment managers need to prepare for a little bit more, you know, and how much more, I suppose, volatility in the market in the second half? Or do you think that broader backdrop of recession is more just something that they should focus on?
No, I think there's probably opportunity to focus on a little bit of volatility. I think it depends which asset class we're looking at. You know, obviously thinking mostly about bonds at the moment, but we're likely, we think, to see some risk off pressure coming through in the equity space. We think that earnings for value stocks in are still relatively high. If we're expecting to see signs of mild recession emerging in the second half of this year, we think growth is going to be relatively mediocre next year, and so earnings probably a little bit high there. So we wouldn't be too surprised to see equities come under pressure in the second half of the year. And naturally, that will give some support to bond markets, which should help push yields a little bit lower. But at the same time, yields are already sort of substantially lower than the policy rate. And as I say, that tension against the policy rate is going to be there. So I think, you know, much less volatility, I would expect, and certainly some opportunity to lengthen duration of the portfolio if we're moving out of an interest rate rising environment into something that's at least going to be stable, but anticipating an easing environment as we go into 2024. So there is going to be a little bit of movement, and I think you know, active investors are going to be able to take some opportunities to lock in for a more medium term move that we would expect to start as we move towards the end of this year.
Okay, interesting. On the valuations for value equities, is that something that applies to value equities, you know, globally here in the UK, in the US, in Europe, or are you just more meaning US equities?
Specifically, they're referring to the US, but I think, you know, there is going to be a consistent assessment that comes through on growth prospects in the European region specifically, mm-hmm. including the UK. You know, we've been positively surprised on the macro front, not that growth has been stellar in either the UK or the Eurozone, but we had feared something far worse given the problems over energy over the winter. And that's not materialized. So both economies have proven more resilient than that. But I think the corollary of that is that the domestic central banks, the ECB and the Bank of England, have had to tighten monetary policy much more. And that's likely to have an impact, a headwind on growth as we move, you know, towards the end of this year, as we go into early next year. So that growth profile is shifted a little bit lower there. And that's something that the equities in the European space are going to have to digest as well.
Yeah, okay. And are you seeing investors sort of prepare portfolios for this outcome? For example, like maybe moving, I don't know, a little bit underweight in growth equities, taking a bit more duration?
Specifically, I don't specifically talk to what individual investors are doing, but, you know, as a market as a whole, there does seem to be a shift towards that. And I think, you know, if you look at bond markets, we went through a phase where bond yields were chased deliberately higher during obviously the interest rate tightening process, but also against a backdrop where inflation looked like it was continuing to rise and threatened forcing central banks to move even further. Now we're at the phase where we're seeing the peak in that come through, inflation rates starting to fall, certainly on a headline basis, some signs that core starting to roll over as well. Now you're seeing yields fall back, and that's clearly, you know, moving from that shorter duration bias that had been there to markets generally moving into longer duration assets again. So yeah, nothing specific on the investor side of things, but clearly that's a move that the market as a whole has made.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. BNY Mellon's chief economist, Shamik Dar, yesterday he was speaking at an investor conference, and he said that going forward, they expect to see higher real interest rates just kind of permanently going forward, and that would be a big change, obviously. But do you agree with that view?
Broadly, yes. I mean, obviously, it begs the question of higher than what. But if he's referring, as I assume he is, to the previous sort of decade and the sort of the aftermath of the great financial crisis, then yeah, I think that is something we are likely to see. we always knew at the time, although it's been difficult to live through over 10 years, that balance sheet recessions tend to have or cast quite a long shadow. It's taken a long time to get through. Obviously, in the early 2010s, we also had, you know, austerity, which even at the time, some of us thought might be misplaced, but hindsight probably proves that point. And so that weighed on growth. It meant that it took a long time for the economies to move out of that. And all of that, you know, against some of the backdrops for the longer term drivers of long term interest rates, demographics, some of the globalization stories have helped long term interest rates fall back. But we've now gone through a phase where it looks like we're basically moving out of that period. We've gone through obviously a very unusual recession with COVID, and we think we're into a more normal, certainly in the terms of the US, a more normal mild business recession is likely to emerge coming through here. But I think, you know, when we look at the vast amounts of investment that's likely to be done, we are hopeful that the underlying rate of interest should be a little bit higher than the depressed rate we saw over most of the 2010s. So yeah, we think that it's likely that real rates probably are going to have to be a little bit firmer going further forwards, with all of the implications that has.
Yeah, okay. And I mean, which parts, if that is the case, which kind of parts of the market can you see that affecting the most?
Well, it clearly has an impact on, you know, on assets over a given duration. So when we're looking at you know, equity markets, where we saw very good growth performance coming through, a lot of that was on the back of, you know, long duration income coming through from those assets. And if we do have a, you know, we're not looking at a material push higher in the underlying rate of interest going further forwards, but it starts to be a headwind for those sorts of stocks as well. And obviously, you know, absolute levels of yield start to change as well.
I'm just thinking about the audience of this podcast that, you know, financial advisors, I suppose, could savings and retirement products be something where we might see some significant, well, maybe not significant, but some price changes in the market as a result of that kind of environment?
They will see some price changes. It's not something I would want to get involved with in terms of, you know, giving that advice to financial advisors. Yeah. They're very well regulated for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So turning now to the US debt ceiling, again, something we've heard about a lot. David, would you be able to just sort of briefly explain what exactly that is? And I think the distinction between a scenario where the government breaches the debt ceiling and actually default on debt is something that would be good to kind of explain as well.
Yeah, so Congress has a statutory duty to lift the limit of overall US government borrowing. And historically, this started in about 1917. Historically, it's almost rubber stamped that. So it's a check and balance, but it's something that Congress has fulfilled. With perhaps the exception of some period in the mid-90s, from 2011, this constitutional duty or this congressional duty is something that started to be politicized. So what President Obama found was that in a Republican House at the time with the Tea Party, who were obviously very fiscally conservative, they withheld the increase in the debt ceiling, which limits overall the amount that the US government can borrow in exchange for other policy changes. And the policy changes that came through at the time were effectively fiscal tightening coming through at that stage. And so we've seen a couple of episodes where that's had a material impact. 2011 was one of those. 2013, we also went through a similarly tricky period. And then we've also gone through a period over the last decade or so where the threat of the debt ceiling has been used, but actually nothing's really emerged. So this time looks slightly different because once again, a sort of small minority of the House, particularly a faction of the Republican Party, stalled their approval of now House Speaker McCarthy, got a lot of significant rule changes going through, which increased their leverage over McCarthy. And once again, that sort of backdrop is leading the House to try and force political change on the White House. And at the same time, the White House and President Biden was involved in obviously the Obama government that made those changes back in 2011. And in hindsight, both in terms of the fiscal austerity that was enacted and the impact that that had on the US economy at the time, and therefore the impact that it had on a political basis, the government thinks that both of those moves were mistakes at the time and is keen not to repeat those mistakes. So you've got two different political factions that are ideologically opposed to compromise at the moment, and the clock's ticking. Now, the slight uncertainty with the debt ceiling is that we're not actually 100% sure when the US government is going to run out of money. It's already got to its borrowing limit, but the Treasury is at the moment being able to use what it describes as extraordinary measures, paying different things in different ways for a period of months to continue normal operations. But ultimately, those extraordinary measures will run out, and they'll run out relatively soon. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has suggested that they could run out as soon as the 1st of June, although she did concede that it might be several weeks after that. And then there's a couple of complications as to when the US also receives additional tax receipts, which give it more money to spend. So we actually think that there's a good chance that this doesn't come to the X date, as they describe it, the point where they run out of cash, until something that's later in July. But nevertheless, as we approach that sort of that first deadline that Janet Yellen has pointed to, the 1st of June, markets are going to get increasingly nervous about what the implications could be.
That's really interesting, David. Thank you. And you touched on it a bit just now, but what sort of steps are being taken to prevent this happening?
Well, at the moment, the preventative steps are basically negotiations of how to get to compromise. So the US House has passed a bill which said they would increase the debt ceiling by $1.5 trillion, but in exchange for $4.5 trillion worth of deficit reduction over the next 10 years, specifically identifying some of the areas that are key sort of or seen as key achievements from the Biden administration. So that's unacceptable to the White House. It'll be unacceptable to the Democrat majority Senate. So there's a period of back and forth going on at the moment. President Biden has met with House congressional leaders, and they are talking about, you know, where this where they could come together. And actually, you know, some of the mood music that's coming from this has been upbeat. President Biden himself suggests that talks have been constructive, as did Brainard, who's now on the Council of Economic Advisers. But, you know, some of the responses from the Republicans has been, well, actually, it's not been that constructive. So, you know, when these political dynamics are going on, it's always hard to get to the sort of truth of what's genuinely going on. But it does feel like many people talk about, you know, different ways out of this situation, but the US system of checks and balances is quite tight, and it's designed to prevent sneaky ways out. So it's designed to try and get compromise between the two parties, which is what you really want in a democracy. So everything is being funneled in that way, but the question is what's going to happen to get the two sides to change their positions. And unfortunately, we think that what is required to get to that end point is a degree of pain being shown. Now, pain can come through in different areas. Ultimately, it could come through from the economy, but the economy is quite slow to show its pain, if you like. You know, even the more regular data tends to be a month out of date before it's actually published. But financial markets show that in real time. And what we're concerned about is that we need to see some degree of financial market pain to give the politicians the excuses to compromise on their sort of long-standing positions. So that sets up a period of volatility, which is why we think that as we get to the 1st of June, we'll increasingly see some pressure come through in financial markets. Mm-hmm. And when this comes towards a head, which we still think is most likely to be towards the end of July, we could see, you know, quite some uncertainty being priced in markets.
Yeah. Okay, that's really interesting. So that volatility, would it primarily be seen in the US Treasury market, bond markets more broadly, or?
Interestingly, not necessarily. I mean, when we looked back at 2011, 2013 as the best examples of what's happened before, I mean, there are certain securities that have shown this up quite clearly for some time. US CDS spreads are widening. Treasury bill yields are higher around the dates when there's a fear that the X date could fall, and, you know, theoretically the US could default on those. So we've seen those being priced differently for a while. But I think as we get into the sort of real throat of this debate, we would expect to see pressure come through on equity markets. Admittedly, in different sort of backdrops, in 2011, we saw the S&P falling by about 17% in the and just shortly after the debt ceiling debate. Even in 2013, there was a 5% drop in the S&P after the resolution. And because we think that ultimately some form of compromise is likely, an agreement to lift the debt ceiling, we think, is likely to be paired with some form of fiscal tightening, either detailed at the time or to be worked out afterwards. But right. But that providing the sort of ideological reason why equities could perhaps come under a little bit of pressure. So we see those coming through first. Dollar, I think, also likely to come under pressure. I mean, interestingly, at the moment, where markets are fearing not just the uncertainty of the resolution, but fearing, well, what if this is wrong? What if we don't get a resolution and you actually get a default? Mm. A default from the US, we think, is something that could have global ramifications. And under those situations, the dollar would normally gain. So at the moment, we think some of the upside to the dollar is coming about from this uncertainty. But if we get a resolution, and that resolution includes some fiscal deficit reduction, then that's something that we think is likely to weaken the dollar in the same way that the banking turmoil has had some impact on the dollar as well. So dollar seeing some converse moves at the moment. And so then last after that is what happens in yields. And actually, when we look back to 2013, both 2-year yields, both 10-year yields, saw very little movement through the whole period. Mm. But in 2011, where we saw a much more substantial risk off, then yields did fall over that period as well. So on balance, we would argue that yields are probably going to be a little bit softer, fall a little bit. But we have less conviction over that than the expectation to see some volatility in equity markets.
Mm, okay, that's interesting. And I mean, yields for US Treasuries have still been a little bit elevated, haven't they, throughout 2023 so far? So
yeah, might be yeah. I mean, we've certainly seen a pickup, which is obviously part of the cycle. And although there's quite a deep discount between sort of the policy rate that we're seeing, you know, the Fed at 5.25, as I said, as that we think is a peak. You know, with Treasury yields, 10-year Treasury yields at 3.5, you've actually got quite a deep inversion, and that inversion is something that we think contributes to the outlook for recession in the second half of the year. So they have risen, but there's still quite a steep discount as they try and anticipate the next move coming through.
Mm, okay. I mean, David, how much, from your perspective, how much does uncertainty around this debt ceiling crisis matter for bond investments? You touched on some of those kind of movements and those impacts that could happen. But I guess particularly as US Treasuries, for example, is seen as quite a safe haven, right, in the event of a downturn and a recession.
Yeah, so I mean, it's quite unusual. And if we go back to 2011, we actually saw S&P, the credit rating agency, downgrade the US sovereign debt outlook on the back of the developments there. Mm. So that suggests that US Treasuries were less of a safe haven than they were before the event. Whereas actually, what happened to yields is they fell a little bit. You know, people thought there was more value in them than that. So slightly contradictory move coming through there. And we would expect broadly the same again. It's why we think that there is probably less adjustment coming through from a bond market perspective than there is in other asset classes. Yeah. So I think there's two phases to this. There's the one, which is what we focus most on, because we think this is what's definitely on the cards, is a period of market volatility and the potentially the short term impact that you could see coming through there. So, you know, if we do see a material impact on equities coming through, we would expect to see a modest drop in yields thereafter. And that's, you know, that's the broad sum of it. So in total, there shouldn't be too much of an impact for the bond market. The bigger question is what would happen theoretically if we're wrong and for whatever reason there is a political miscalculation and the US does start to default. Mm-hmm. And there are two sort of answers from that. The first is the sort of if they default on everything, so they just stop paying anything and therefore they missed a securities payment. Mm. And frankly, the outlook for that is sort of financial market Armageddon. I mean, back in 2011, 2013, the Federal Reserve subsequently published records of its meetings where it said, well, in the event of a default on securities, we don't know what will happen because we as the Fed don't have sufficient knowledge of how the financial system works to know how that could work through. So if that's what the Federal Reserve is saying, you know, there's a great deal of uncertainty about what the implications of that could be. But there's a second school of thought which suggests, and probably quite rightly, that the Treasury and the Federal Reserve will be able to manage not to default on securities, in which case bond markets will see this uncertainty, but that they'll default on other obligations, which means, you know, effectively they stop government pay, they stop paying pensions, they stop paying for other goods and services. So that then becomes a very extreme form of government shutdown, a very extreme form of fiscal tightening, which is a decelerator to the economy, would probably propel the US even more quickly into recession and may come and may therefore sort of accelerate the Federal Reserve's easing. Well, in that situation, you would expect to see bond yields also falling back quite sharply as they try and catch up with how much this additional fiscal tightening, which isn't in the markets at the moment, is going to impact Fed pricing going further forwards. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, two very different outcomes. One, really opening Pandora's box in a way that we're pretty confident we won't see. But the other also suggesting, you know, a much more material economic impact, which is inevitably going to have more of an impact on bond markets. But both of those outcomes, a default is something that we don't expect ultimately to occur. the catch, I think, is that from a financial market perspective, we may have to believe that it could occur to set in motion the dynamics to make sure it doesn't.
Yeah. Okay. And then the final question on the debt ceiling crisis is, are you seeing or can you see any issues of liquidity prop up, particularly in the Treasury, US Treasuries space?
I mean, there have been issues around liquidity, particularly as the Fed's been very slowly withdrawing excess reserves via its quantitative tightening program, and we've seen a lot of money moving into money market funds and then being repositioned back at the Fed into the overnight reverse repo. So that's left the market relatively tight, and that liquidity has been affected in the US as well. Again, I think, you know, in the short term, the increased volatility around resolution would probably add to some of those problems, and you would probably see a little bit less liquidity there. Not necessarily anything that would be disruptive, but certainly something that that would be noticeable. But it becomes a different ballgame if we actually go into default, which again is something we're pretty confident we won't. But in that scenario, yeah, I mean, we could see some significant liquidity issues at that point.
Okay. Brilliant. David, that's about all we have time for this afternoon. So thank you again very, very much for joining us.
It's
great to have you. And thank you everyone for listening. If you'd like to get in contact with any questions about this episode, you can email me. I'm nblackburn@citywire.co.uk, or you can find us on Twitter. We're @New Model Advisor. Thanks again, everyone, for listening.